I have been sort of immersing myself in the sound world of your music on this album, and I have a lot of questions and a lot of things to talk about. I wonder, first of all, if you could give our listeners information about yourself. Originally from Germany, you're now teaching in New York. Can you tell us a little bit about your life's journey so far?
Yeah, I was born in 1970 in East Berlin, and I studied first at the conservatory in Dresden, Germany. And then I came to America to study at Rice University for my master's, and then continued to study at the Manhattan School of Music for my doctorate degree. And then I spent a semester in South Korea to study composition, spent another semester in Germany working as a vocal coach, and I came back, and I've been teaching at the Manhattan School of Music since 2000, so for 18 years.
Yeah. What led you to be interested in composing in the first place? When did you get that into your system?
I started when I was 9, and I think it was really an impulse. I did play the piano. My parents thought it's a good part of my general education. And when I was 9 years old, I thought of a song, and I also wanted to write it down. So there wasn't really any instruction that I had or somebody pointing this out as a possibility. I just wanted to do it. And it's been like this ever since, and hopefully it will never end.
Yeah. Well, your music is so interesting, and allow me to say it, I've really heard nothing like it.
Thank you very much. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
It has a sense of intimacy, but also intricacy. Do you know what I mean? It seems like it has a real sense of purpose behind it.
Thank you.
So I'm hoping that we can go through and talk about these six pieces, because there are only six tracks on this particular CD, but they're all interesting in their own way. Can you talk just a little bit about the philosophy of your music? You talk about explaining or exploring the psychological nature of memory using musical quotations. Can you put that in context for us? Because I hear a lot of that in this recording.
Yeah, I'm very interested in writing music in a very specific cultural context. And of course, that has to be my own cultural context. I cannot really speak for any other cultural context. And that means that's the music that I grew up with, that is very natural to me, that's part of my musical environment, especially when I was younger. But of course, I'm also very interested in dealing with that environment in a contemporary sense, because, you know, we live in the 21st century. So I'm interested in using those kind of cultural icons, but projecting ideas that are very relevant to our time onto it. And one of those is not only that a quotation really functions as a kind of cultural memory, because you retrieve something from the past, which gives you the possibility to transform it in all kinds of different ways, to update it, just as we always do when we remember something from the past, but also to deal with issues that I find highly relevant in our social environment nowadays. And if you have music that's not yours, to what extent you can present this in a way that's assimilated or integrated or the exact opposite actually touches upon a lot of issues that we deal with on a daily basis, and I find that very interesting.
Yeah, it's very evident, of course, in the first two tracks on this CD, which reference music of Heinrich Schütz, right?
Yes.
And also has a tie-in to the 30 Years' War. A lot of folks listening today may not be familiar even with what the 30 Years' War was. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you use the motet of Schütz in your music?
Yeah, that's also something I find quite interesting. We just had a concert in Germany that performed those two pieces last October, because that's 400 years after the 30-year war broke out, which was an extremely devastating war, especially for Germany. Some people think that about half of the entire population actually died, but also because 100 years ago, the first war ended, which was a similar devastating event. But Schütz lived through the 30-year war. It means that for basically his entire adult productive life, he was dealing with that situation, and he wrote a lot of music that specifically related to that context. So the first piece is based on a motet that was published in the year the 30-year war ended, and it's basically a plea for peace. And the second piece was written for a convention that tried to find a political solution to the conflict, where he was addressing directly politicians or people with political power at this time asking them to do something to create peace because most of the population was really suffering at this point. Mm. And that's something that I find very interesting because of the relationship between music and politics.
I find it very interesting also that you begin that work with some drumming, which has, you know, military connotations
yes.
to it.
Yeah.
And it kind of rolls out of control. But then you end it with what I presume is the Schütz Motet.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, so there's a journey in there somewhere.
Yeah, and that's also, of course, part of the narrative that you can create as a composer. But if you would experience that piece in a live performance, at the end, the vocal ensemble surrounds the entire audience and therefore basically overcomes this barrier that often music performances have with a stage and an audience and really creates a kind of sense of community.
Yeah. Aside from the text of the Schütz, you also have quotations that are spoken in here from St. Francis and from the political philosopher Hannah Arendt and also from civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. Can you talk a little bit about that text and what those figures perhaps have in common for you, why you brought them together in this music?
I was basically, since the original motet by Heinrich Schütz is a plea for peace, wanted to include contemporary or different views on what peace actually means and its importance. And again, there are personal choices, but I'm very interested in Hannah Arendt, who I think is one of the most inspiring and insightful thinkers that especially dealt with the Nazi years between 1933 and 45, also of Jewish heritage, somebody immigrated from Germany. But in that sense, Martin Luther King is also a very interesting figure in that regard, and also Francis of Assisi. So I was basically trying to project the complexity of what that actually means and how different people have thought about it, that someone going to a concert wouldn't just, quote-unquote, enjoy music, but also, which I find very important, think.
Let's move on to another track. In looking at the titles here, it strikes me that you have a wonderful talent for titles.
Thank you. It's difficult.
In German and in English, there's some kind of circular thing going on. And number three here is called Eternal Return,
yep.
which in itself is kind of an interesting concept. You call it a passacaglia, which I guess Eternal Return sort of refers to the idea of a passacaglia, repeated bass.
Exactly.
Can you talk about that particular piece, because it's so fascinating the way that you deconstruct the text and how that deconstruction is echoed in the trumpet. This is for soprano and trumpet with extended techniques, but all of them, they seem to sort of play off of each other. And this is a setting of Friedrich Nietzsche, right?
Yeah, it's one sentence that I was interested in specifically 2 or 3 years ago, because it really often seems that in our societies we return to all kinds of different things, including negative things that we maybe have thought were overcome at some point through education and just learning from mistakes made in the past. But what this piece basically does is that it always returns to the same idea in a non-directional, broken, fragmented kind of way. But at the end, it kind of ends up exactly at the same location where it started. So it goes in circles. And it to me really is an expression, because I often think that that's what we're doing as human beings, that we seem to be going in circles.
I kept wondering if maybe the trumpet was going to reference a little Richard Strauss with the Zarathustra text.
Yeah, that's interesting. If anything, maybe Charles Ives' unanswered question, those things that we cannot answer, but that's definitely a very interesting idea.
Well, and tell me if I'm on the right track here, but I sense, like, especially at the very end, it caught me a little off guard the way that it ends. There's a silence, and I think, oh, it's over, and then they come back. Sort of a sense of humor going on there. For some reason, it put me in mind of Haydn and his joke quartet, you know.
I find that very interesting. I would not say that humor is something that naturally comes to me in music, but it's been mentioned various times, so there must be something about it, and I actually quite like it.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear I'm not the only one who hears that.
No, definitely not.
Let's pause for a minute and talk a little bit about finding your compositional voice. I mentioned the idea that it has a sense of delicacy and intricacy. There's a lot of power there, too, but it seems to be very, very focused and very purposeful. And I'm wondering how you came to find that pathway in composing for you.
That is a very interesting point and probably very difficult to say.
Yeah.
Because it's a product of, you know, many, many years of thinking how to do something, what's the best way of communicating. It's always a very fine line that one wants to be, of course, clear, but also wants to provide enough space for people to have different ideas and approaches and perspectives of something that one says. So I try to be very economical with everything I do. I try not for my emotion to take over. Composition is obviously a practice that takes a fairly long time, so there has to be certain controlling aspects. And I want to create really a structure, a strong foundation that allows me to say what I'm trying to say, or at least the experience that I'm hoping a piece would create, but also not excluding other kind of possibilities. But I agree that I'm interested in the subtle tones, not something that's on the forefront, but maybe in the background, that one has to discover, that requires a little bit of, you know, commitment, interest, research, just spending time with it. In general, also when I listen to other kinds of music.
Well, in some ways it has a little bit more of a, for lack of a better term, I would say old-fashioned technique of really referencing, you know, great events, great culture, all of those things that you're bringing in there. But you're doing it all for a purpose, as you mentioned.
Yeah, very much so, I hope.
Yeah. I definitely hear it in listening to this and seeing everything going into it. It's always fascinating for me to talk to a living composer about their music because, you know, we can gain insights that we're not going to gain just from the performers, per se. Can you talk a little bit about how you actually write these pieces? I mean, do you start hearing music, or do you approach it from a different angle? Is it always different for you?
No, I mean, it's always a little bit different, but I would say there's a general way how I approach a piece of music, and that's usually that I think of a form or a mechanism first, and of specific ways to realize that later. So it's not that I have like a specific musical idea that I would scribble down a sound, a motif, or whatever that may be, and then I start to take it and develop it and kind of organically grow it into a piece. I see the entire piece in my imagination quite clearly, but only in its general terms. So it's more like a vessel that I create that then contains the specific ideas. And it has to do with the placement of very specific musical moments, often quotations, within the passage of time. And then I realize that specifically. So it's really a kind of realization or a process that makes something more and more concrete, which was very common among composers up until maybe the Baroque or the Classical era, that you would work more like an architect than, let's say, somebody who plants a flower.
You mentioned musical quotations, and I also hear, I may just be hearing things, but I also hear quotations in the form of the music as well, which brings me to the fourth track on the CD is called Monument for C, but it also has the NU in parentheses, so you can read it as Moment for C or Monument for C. Mm-hmm. And the style that I hear in this piece with all those repeated notes, it the first thing I thought of was Monteverdi and his Stile Concitato, you know, where he does all the ha 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 kind of repeated stuff in the singing. Which brings up, you know, the idea of people reading things into your music. I mean, how do you feel about that sort of thing?
Oh, I love it, because that basically sets your imagination free, and I think to an extremely high degree that's what it's all about. By no means should everybody hear it the same way I do it, and I hear those things differently all the time anyway, so that's not really a reliable authority in that regard. But it's interesting you mention it, because this piece does exist in another version where it's the ensemble is accompanied by a string orchestra. So it's really kind of like a concerto for those four instruments, only that it's missing in that specific version of it. So in that regard, you're perfectly right. Another composer that I'm quite interested in is Schumann, because I think he explores the idea of an epilogue quite a bit in his music. So once something is over, he composes the afterthought or a memory of it after we actually experienced it. And that's something that I'm also very interested in my pieces. But yeah, perfectly right material, but also form.
Well, you named the CD after the epilogue on your the entire disc, really, the Fairness-Lied.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let me ask you about, I know I'm being a little self-indulgent because I have you here, but I'm curious about the title of Monument for Sea or Moment for Sea. Where does that come from?
It comes from a visual artist, Dan Flavin, and I, upstate New York, in an art exhibition called Dear Beacon, discovered those sculptures that are basically made of fluorescent light tubes. And there's a piece that consists of six of them. There's three pairs of different sizes that he puts together in all kinds of different constellations, which is something that I actually quite like, how differently one can experience the same thing in different contexts. But he calls those monuments. And I wanted to call the piece a monument because I actually used the same really literally visual technique of juxtaposing the same ideas, like a certain duration or length, in different ways. But also the monument means that it's there for someone to be remembered, a kind of memory. And here is the 4C aspect of the title, because I started to write the piece after the attacks on Charlie Hebdo in Paris, which really struck me that like artists were attacked by terrorists and killed because they expressed like a free thought. And so I wanted to basically compose a monument for those people.
Yeah, and again, a piece that is somehow precipitated by a violent, tragic event in our history.
Yep.
I mean, rather recent history in this case.
Yep, you're completely right.
Well, can we talk about the final two tracks as well? Because it's also fascinating for me to hear what you have to say about these different pieces. Number five is entitled Weg Lied der Schwäne, or the Song of the Swans, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm using my college-level German here.
Which is still very much intact, yeah.
And now there's another Baroque motet that appears in this, yes?
Yep, by Renaissance composer Jakob Arkadelt.
The Renaissance, yeah.
Yeah, and again, that's a piece that I knew very well. I've sung this many times when I sang in a vocal ensemble when I was in college. So it's, of course, a personal connection, which is always very important. But also the whole idea of the swan song and a relationship with death. Because in that piece, there's at some point a speaking part where the title of a movie is being mentioned that deals with the issue of assisted suicide. Not that I want to communicate any opinions about it, but just to bring up those kind of issues which are very relevant in our society.
Yeah. So many different ideas collected under this, the rubric of these distant songs, as you call the CD.
Yeah.
Interesting. The final piece on here, track number six, has a little bit of a tongue twister. I wonder if you could say it for us.
In German, it's versinkend, versingend, verklingend. And it means something that stops to sink and to sound and to sing. And it's because the piece is based on a piece by Debussy, which is called The Sunken Cathedral. So the sinking aspect, but sinking and singing, they also sound very similar and they have, you know, a kind of relationship. So I came up with that title almost like a miniature poem.
You can hear some of those Debussy chords very occasionally.
Yes.
Wafting through your piece.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting. And that brings us to the final piece that you have on here, which you call an epilogue, and it's actually the title track, the Fairness-Lied, or the Distant Song.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also based on a German folk song, right?
Yep. It's a German folk song, and that's something that I used to sing and perform quite a bit when I was younger. And it's nice to me to kind of like revive that music that I grew up with in my own pieces nowadays.
It's interesting how the entire arc of the CD, it begins very quietly in the drums, sort of growing out of silence. And at the end, the distant lead gets further and further away and softer and kind of fades off into the distance. I'm assuming that was your intent.
Yes, definitely. And that's very right. Although, I mean, I didn't write those pieces, as one CD. It took a little bit of time to find the right order, but that's what I had in mind. And I'm very happy that you noticed that as well.
Yeah. How long did you work on this CD, assembling it and putting together the pieces in order?
I think I composed the pieces over the course of 3 years, 3.5 years, no, 3 years, something like that. And I must have made the first recording about a year or 2 years ago. So it's a fairly recent endeavor for someone my age. My students would, of course, call a piece written 3 years ago ancient, but that's the relativity that does change over time.
Well, my listeners would think of it as very new still.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, me too.
The one thing that I notice quite often in your work, and at least what I've seen of it in this recording, this album, is how important text is to you and to your music. And you treat it not necessarily like somebody who is creating a song, but you take the text and really get inside of it and kind of blow it apart in your music. Can you talk about your relationship with text and how it fits into your music?
I would say that text definitely always inspires me in terms of its content, but also in terms of its sound. So I'm right now not so interested in making the text very comprehensible. I want to treat it in a musical way. If one is interested in the text itself, one can, of course, always read it in a program note and so forth. But I also noticed that more and more I would be interested in using text in a way that is very comprehensible. But at that point, still, like the diversity and the complexity of language and how that can be treated in a musical way and also in a rhetorical way is what I find quite interesting. But it functions as primarily an inspiration on lots of different levels.
Yeah, and it strikes me at how you have incorporated text into your musical style, because it seems to fit perfectly well.
Yeah, that's nice to know it. That's something I'm very interested in achieving.
That's great. And as an English speaker, when I hear the German text, I'm not really comprehending it without a little research anyway. So I think English listeners will sort of get to that level where they're hearing it more as music, even though it's not necessarily being sung melodically.
Yeah, I think German native speakers would experience this quite similarly to you.
Well, as we wrap it up, I wonder if there's anything else that you would like people to know about this particular CD or about your music in general. If somebody's listening to it for the first time, what would you say to them?
Yeah, that's also a very important question. I, generally speaking, do not want to say too much, and I don't want to be too specific. I don't want anybody to tell them how to listen to my music or actually how to listen to music in general. Of course, I want to point out things, and those might be just the ones that I'm interested in. And when I talk about other people's music in my classes, I try to do exactly the same. But for someone who writes music right now, the question is always what makes it actually relevant. I don't believe it can only be things that I am personally interested in, that I like. It cannot be detached from the life that we live all together in a society. And it seems that our world is moving more and more towards issues such as immigration, migration, for various reasons. And then how someone deals with something that's different, how that's being incorporated, assimilated, integrated, or maybe to a certain degree, or maybe not at all. Like, I actually find dealing with those issues in a general way very interesting, and then to see how that can be translated into a piece of art, more generally speaking, or into a piece of music. And that could then create a general platform that everybody can relate to, that could inspire, or that could trigger communication and so forth.
Would you say there's a level of social conscience to your music?
I would definitely say that one is really increasing. That's nothing that I had as part of my compositional interest when I was younger, which really might be a response to growing up in a totalitarian society in East Germany where everything was absolutely saturated by propaganda. And we're just like, we did not want this anymore. We wanted to have our music for ourselves and for what it actually is. But again, it seems that right now, the way the world is moving, there I feel is a responsibility for an artist to consciously deal with the environment in which we live in a social way, but also in a natural way, in a scientific way, and so forth.
Well, the music on this recording is extremely interesting and evocative and certainly invites a lot more research in listening to it, which I think is a wonderful exercise.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Reiko Füting, the composer of the music on this new album from New Focus Recordings. It's called Fernislied or Distant Song. We'll link to that from our website. And do you have a website where people can explore more about you and your music?
Yes, it's reikofuting.com. And there's music and thoughts and all those kind of things.
Okay. Well, we'll link to it from our website as well for folks. Again, Reiko, thank you for joining us here on FM 91.
That was a real pleasure. Thank you so much.